I was never the talented kid, in a way. I had friends who drew like way better than me, and I was like, I'll never get to that level. And then when I started designing, I had seen so many designers that are so more skilled than me, like than I was. Like their designs were so slick. I was like, oh my God, I'm never gonna get to that level. And again, just practice, practice, practice. And there's one more thing, and that's doing whatever you do as a practice to also think, how are you gonna teach it? Because once I started getting that into my system, that's when I started making all my guesses into a methodology, into a systematic way of me doing those things. And I was able to teach it, and to also later, you know, leverage that to build my community, to later launch online courses, to train my team, to everything that I'm doing right now. Like, I'm also looking at how I'm systemizing things after I practice them again and again and again.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 146, with the host of the Mindful and Ruthless podcast, Tagi Schreiber.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, JC Preston, founder of New Inceptions, and co-hosting today is Veronica Kieran, author of Stories of Elders, What the Greatest Generation Knows About Technology That You Don't. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is a show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, athletes, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. And today, guys, we have a chat that I'm excited for y'all to hear. You know, a lot of people who do meaningful work often have to go through a phase where they might feel that the world is against them, and you know that they're just not getting any breaks, and they ask themselves, how can they possibly go on trying to do what they've set out to do? And unfortunately, because they're so miserable, you know, many feel that maybe what they used to do wasn't necessarily so bad as what they're going through currently. So they give up on their dream and they go back to living a life of quiet mediocrity. And this is totally understandable because, you know, many people fear loss more so than they fear not achieving something. And what helped me get over this particular hump in my own career and as I've gone through the years is remembering what's called the Mach 1 principle. The idea being that when they were setting the ground speed record back in the day, the driver of the vehicle that was going to go over the speed of sound was getting more and more vibrations as it was getting faster and faster and faster. So the pilot, I guess you could say driver, is like his choice was to either stop and maybe they could rethink things and try it again, or just ride it out and see what happens. Well, he persevered. As you probably guessed, they passed Mach 1. And as soon as that point hit, as soon as they created that sonic boom, the air got smooth. All that turbulence that he was going through, all that was giving the vehicle all the shakes, all that was behind him. That being the case, today's guest is certainly someone who's seen this principle come into play in their life. And when he first got out of school, Tagi seemed to be on a smooth road of success. And as time went on, you know, he found himself in a situation where he was released from a great position in a startup. And then on top of that, found himself $50,000 in debt. And at that point, he really struggled to figure out what his next move was. Well, long story short, he figured it all out. And today he finds himself rubbing shoulders with some of the celebrities of the internet entrepreneurial space. So in today's chat with Veronica and I, we'll be talking to Tagi about this story and how he got through his own personal sound barrier. And we'll also be talking about what he learned from all this experience, what he means by living a full stack life, and pointers in building a business website in 2019. But before we get to that, I want to remind you guys about Expert Secrets. And the reason that I'm bringing this one out today is because really, you guys, if you haven't read this book, you know, this is one that you definitely should read. It's, in fact, it's on Sagi's have to read list. And again, it's Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. And in particular, what Sagi refers to in this book is called the perfect webinar. However, it's not the only secret in the book. And in the book, Russell actually fills us in on all kinds of things from how leading experts use marketing, branding, message design, all different kinds of topics. And this book is probably one of the best introductions I've seen used to help people get their heads around becoming an online entrepreneur. And chances are you're an expert at something. Now, something that people would pay to have your help with. And really, if you believe now is the time to get your message out, then this book is certainly for you. You can get it free today by visiting newinceptions.com/expertsecrets. Again, that link is newinceptions.com/expertsecrets. All right, before we get started, I also want to remind you guys of the fact that I'm archiving old sessions of the show. If you want to get access to those classic conversations, check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/newinceptions. Also, don't forget to subscribe and comment on the show via whatever platform you listen to podcasts on. Doing so helps other people find the show, which means we can help them do more fulfilling work themselves. Show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/146. And as usual, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. This is JC Preston with Veronica Kieran, and thank you for joining us today. Veronica, been a little while. I think the last time we talked to you was when we were talking to Mr. Angel Jones.
Yeah.
What is up in your world? How you doing?
Oh, I am here drinking some hot coffee, wrapped in a blanket, wearing a wool sweater. It's cold. It's about...
still winter.
That's what I've got here. We got the polar vortex bearing down on us for sure. But yeah, it's just getting prepared for... I'm doing a TED Talk next month. So that's the main thing that I've got going on right now.
Yeah, it's something else to have to prepare for a TED Talk because it's not one of those, you know, very casual
pitches. Yeah, you don't get to wing it.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
So that'll be cool.
I'm excited.
And I know that you're doing some other conferences, so yeah, you got a lot of things coming up this year.
Yeah, I'm excited to head over to New Delhi for a conference to speak at, which is... it's my first international conference. Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, speaking of making great things happen, which since you got your book out, you've had a lot of success, I've noticed, and was part of the reason why you haven't been on the show as much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
today's guest is someone I think a lot of the audience is actually going to be able to relate with. He's gone the typical working day route, which a lot of us have. And after getting out of the school as a designer, he spent some time at a startup and, you know, he had some really good success there and really early success, I'd say. And then upon hearing some of the more influential, entrepreneurial based podcasts out there, he caught the bug of starting his own thing. But the problem that he had at the point, especially before he actually started making money and building it into what it is today, is that he found himself being $50,000 in debt, and you know, frankly, he didn't know what to do, and that's when he started learning about the importance of having a coach, which you know all about. That's where his story really kicked into the next gear. And today, we're speaking with Sagi Schreiber from Tel Aviv. You can be found at sagischreiber.com. Sagi, thanks for joining us today, man. How you doing?
Hey, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
So, let's kind of go back to the beginning, and when I say the beginning, I mean school. You know, my mom was a trained designer who became an art teacher, and you could say that you're kind of gone down that same path. Do you remember what you found fascinating to go to school to become a designer in the first place?
Well, I think that I was always the one that was drawing in school, so it was just natural for me to try and develop a career from it. I was actually pretty afraid to try and do that because I heard there's no money in being a designer. And
yeah.
That was complete lies that I was told back then. But to tell you the truth, like, it was just my parents who supported me making what I love to my career. And so I just took their advice and took my follow my own intuition back then. And went for it. So that was, I was excited about working, doing something I love. I think that was what excited me back then.
Oh, totally. And I heard that line myself. When I was back in junior high, I had the choice of following an art heavy way or science heavy in STEM, and everybody talks about STEM.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I could do what my mom did, but I know that it doesn't seem like there's a bunch of money that way. But I can tell you that the engineers that are in my family, wow, they're making like 100K. So that's the way I'm going to go. I totally get what you're saying there. But it is, especially in today's economy. I mean, as a designer, you can do stuff that so many people have issues with because they haven't been really trained to do that. And it takes such a long time to develop an artistic eye.
Yeah, it's totally something that developing the eye thing is like, this is something that comes with so many years of experience that I guess it's in every single career or everyone who does something for a long time starts to develop an eye for it, or like, feeling and intuition that makes it great for them. Sometimes I wish I would have been a salesperson, being like with intuition to make sales. I think that this now gives me a huge, it's an advantage in the marketplace. Even if I don't even do design, I can use it to my advantage in my own marketing materials, in my own blog and my own landing pages and everything that I do.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and you can tell too, if you go on your website, it's beautiful. You have great backgrounds and the artistry is absolutely there. I think you make a good point though, that is a really good takeaway for our listeners. There's a meme that's circulating around Reddit right now that, it's a dude kind of sketching and then another guy saying, oh, I wish that I had that talent. And the person sketching says, no, you just practice. I wish I could just be everything like that. No, you just need to practice. It's just practice. You're right. Like the longer you're in an industry, the longer you're doing something, like it's just, you build on your expertise. And that's kind of all there is to the secret sauce.
Yeah. And can I add something to that for a second? So it's like, you hit a great point because I was never the talented kid in a way. I had friends who drew like way better than me. And I was like, I'll never get to that level. Uh-huh. And then when I started designing, I had seen so many designers that are so more skilled than me. Like then I was like, their designs were so slick. I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to get to that level. And again, just practice, practice, practice. And there's one more thing. And that's doing whatever you do as a practice to also think, how are you going to teach it?
Uh-huh.
Because once I started getting that into my system, that's when I started making all my guesses into a methodology, into a systematic way of me doing those things. And I was able to teach it and to also later, leverage that to build my community, to later launch online courses, to train my team, to everything that I'm doing right now. Like I'm also looking at how I'm systemizing things after I practice them again and again and again.
Yeah, I love that. It makes you articulate what you're doing.
So let's backtrack a little bit. Once you got actually out of school, it sounds like you were a bit of an accelerated path. It sounds like you did everything right in school to transition to the working world. Tell us about how you had that early success as someone just coming out of school and how that all went for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I launched my blog, my first blog, which was Israel's first design blog. Basically, I launched it just before I finished school.
Mm-hmm.
So when I launched it, it made such a huge impact in the industry in Israel that 6 months later, I got a call from a recruiter saying that she's got some Israeli startup which with millions of users that now need a designer and they want to talk to me. And that was Fiverr.com.
Yeah.
So So that was 6 months after, and I went there to Fiverr.com and for a meeting, and I sat with one of the founders, and that was like the, in a way, that was the most like unofficial interview I ever had in my life. It was kind of like, so show me something that you've done, and I'm showing them like my final project in school. I didn't have much to show besides that, but I did a pretty fine job with my project back then, like with my project in school, and I made sure it was relevant to the market. So it was pretty cool, and I showed them that, and it's like, okay, so do you want to start working here? I'm like, what? Like, do you want to start working here? I'm like, I don't know, like, and they're pretty far away. They're like, Israel is so small that people are looking for jobs here, which in their own city, mm-hmm. which is like 15-minute ride away. Mm-hmm. Or if it's like in Tel Aviv, and I lived in Herzliya, so it was kind of like a half-hour drive. And they were in North Israel, kind of in something which was like kind of like an hour away. And I was like, oh, I don't know, you're an hour away kind of thing. That's far from me. Like, I know in the U.S. people drive like hours for jobs,
yeah.
But here in Israel, it's so like funny, the proportions that people just don't have. It's like people will not get a job if it's more than half an hour away. So like, I don't know, you're an hour away, like me traveling all the way to north of Israel. That sounds kind of like, I don't know. And he was like, and then he hit the table and like, that's my offer. And like he told me the number. And the number was a salary that I never heard anybody with my years of experience made in their life.
Oh, wow.
So I like, okay, so I'll think about it. But then I told him like the next day that, of course, I'll take it.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I was the first designer at Fiverr.com. I think that's one of the things that really started this this game for me. After Fiverr.com, I launched my own startups. I joined as a co-founder with a couple of partners to... we started working on this app. We got accepted to Silicon Valley Accelerator called Upwest Labs.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
We flew over to Palo Alto, and over there every day at 10 a.m. in the morning, like a mentor came in, and those mentors were from companies like LinkedIn, Google, Cisco, Facebook. Like, they brought the best of the best. Like, one of the ladies was the lady that has done all the marketing for WhatsApp, which was acquired later by Facebook.
Right, right.
So it was, that was very like, great people came in and just like, they totally killed our startup. They said, we have a failing startup and we're not going anywhere with our startup. So we need to change quick. And so we did. And a week into the accelerator, we changed, we totally ditched our previous startup. And we decided to try a new one. And the new one was a company that basically gets competitive intelligence for your competitors online.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the founders that was with me, one of my partners, he was two of them were in the intelligence unit in the army. So they were all about intelligence and stuff, and said they love researching websites and stuff. So they're like, let's make an app that can track all your competitors online and bring you their traffic sources and also their site changes.
Wow.
And also, if like somebody leaves the company, then it gets your LinkedIn updates, so you can hire them now and steal them.
Oh wow!
Once they're out in the open market, and like all these, like we built a dashboard full of like connected APIs, which just showed you everything in one pager.
Oh wow!
And like in a few months, we were already like hooked up with demos in LinkedIn and Cisco and all those companies in the Valley. When we came back to Israel, everybody was back in Israel back then. A few months later, we heard about this company that actually like a bigger company called SimilarWeb. I don't know if you guys heard of SimilarWeb. Mm. But it was a company. Russell Brunson talks about SimilarWeb all the time. That's how he uses it.
Gotcha.
We heard about SimilarWeb. We just built a similar product to ours, but they were already big. They're already like 50 people, like a big company. And so we said, okay, maybe we can connect to their APIs, have some kind of cooperation with them. So our CEO went to meet their CEO just to talk about some collaboration options. And he got out of that office that day with an offer to buy our company. And that happened. So we got Echo hired about 2 weeks after we just signed at SimilarWeb. Each of us got key roles in SimilarWeb, you know, the option package, some cash up front, all that stuff. And we started working there.
Wow.
So I became the lead designer of SimilarWeb, started as a first designer. And at that point, I opened another blog. I launched a blog called Hacking UI. Because when I was in the Silicon Valley and connecting with all the great designers there, I also met Facebook's first designer. I met like amazing people. Mm. I was like in a meetup at the Twitter headquarters with the founders of Ift and stuff like that. Like I was talking to amazing people with like, so like everybody was such a visionary. I felt like in Israel, we're just so disconnected from that. So I wanted to plug myself into that ecosystem and community of the, you know, global design community, specifically the Bay Area and San Francisco. So I launched Hacking UI, which is a design blog, international design blog, all in English, with one of my partners from the startup. He was a front-end developer. I was a designer. And that blog actually really started, we started monetizing it from the get-go. We brought in sponsors and had a weekly newsletter.
Good.
I brought in like sponsors from Pixel Perfect. And then it started the journey of like SimilarWeb being in a leading position in a big startup and growing a team there, scaling a design team. And in 2.5 years, fast forward to 2.5 years later, we were already 350 people in the company. And I had 7 designers in my team that I recruited and trained and mentored. And the blogs, they grew as well. And Hacking UI made us 66K that year. That was 2015, as a side project.
Wow.
So we said, it just made us 66K in the second year of its existence. If we leave our day jobs now and do it full time, can it make us 200K? And then we can leave our day job?
Yeah.
It might be possible. So that's what we decided to do. We just left our day jobs.
Wow. But I'm kind of curious now. So like a big part of your story is eventually you left your day job, but things started to somehow go wrong. How did that story evolve? Did that website not end up doing well, or did you sell it? What happened? I'm like enthralled. I want to know everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything started to go, everything went well at first. Mm. We said, oh my God, it's so fun. Like, you know, we're working on our dream. Just like, you know, we got an office. My partner and I, we just started like doing the things we did. We launched a course called, Side Project Accelerator, where we taught others how to build their own side projects and monetize and stuff. And it was great. But then came the point a few months later where we just couldn't find a way to monetize and make enough money for ourselves. And we kind of pulled in different directions as well. A thing that led to us always kind of like getting into arguments.
Yeah.
And it was just like everything started to go sideways and we found ourselves in 6 full months of no way to pull a dime out of our own company for ourselves.
Mm. Wow.
And that was tough. I was already a father of two with a mortgage and my wife was not working at the time, and it was just a complete mess. And Israel's cost of living is very, very high, like crazy high. So I found myself going into debt, having to take a personal loan because it wasn't on my partner, it was on me to make my ends meet. He didn't have a family. He definitely didn't have those problems.
Uh-huh.
And he actually saved up his entire life. So he had enough runway for as long as he wants.
Sure.
And I didn't.
That makes a difference.
Yeah, totally. And I spent my whole savings on buying my apartment, which was back in SimilarWeb. And I had nothing. I just went into debt and wasted the entire big loan that I took in less than 3 months, found myself after that 6 month period. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, that must have been scary.
You know, that was very scary.
It's unfortunate too, because I think that, I mean, it sounds like you're similar to JC and I, where you're addicted to entrepreneurship. You'd like to dream big and have great ideas and see them come to fruition. And you had so many before that. So then to have one fail in that way and to feel like, you know, like, what did I do here? Because this was working. What happened?
Totally. I felt like a failure.
Yeah, I think it would be heartbreaking. So did you choose to leave at that point in time, or eventually you ended up hiring a coach, but
yeah, so totally. I first of all, it was at the beginning of that rough period where we didn't pull in any money. It was like just a month before we started that, I read a book called Fish Out of Water by a guy called Kevin Wayman, mm-hmm. who's an entrepreneur I heard on JLD's show, Entrepreneurs on Fire. So I read his book, and his story was like, he was a failing entrepreneur. Things were not going so well for him, and he was in debt. And he hired a coach, and that coach helped him like get out of, you know, build his way into success as an entrepreneur and his way out of debt. So back then I called him. I was still not in debt or anything, but I was definitely not doing well. And I reached out to him, and he offered me to hire him as a coach. And he gave me an offer, which was very high. I never mm-hmm. ever heard of, you know, paying so much for a coach, and especially in US dollars when you're
working in shekels. Yeah.
But it was like, it was crazy for me. And I was like, okay, so like, maybe I should take it, maybe not. And I remember my partner and even my dad told me, don't do it. Like, you're crazy if you're taking this guy as a coach. Like, first of all, is he even a certified coach? And, you know, is he going to help you? Does he know anything about life in Israel and how finances go here? Does he, like, is he a life coach or a business coach? What is he? Like, how is he going to help you? And how are you going to even pay that? That's a crazy amount of money. It's not going to, like, you're crazy. So my gut intuition told me definitely take him on. Also something about like the cosmic way in which I reached out to him, like, and he actually answered and we got phone calls. Like, I brought this opportunity on myself and I had to release it now.
Yeah.
But I told him no. And then the 6 month period started. So at the end of that 6 month period, I remember like that was crazy. I remember like walking my dog one time. That's one night I was walking my dog out. In the field near my house, and I was just like, I was looking at the stars, they're like shining beautiful, but I was feeling so trapped on the ground, like something's pinning my legs to the ground. And I felt so bad. I felt like a failure to my partner, to my wife, to my community, to my audience, to myself, and I just didn't know. Like, I was running equations in my mind, like, how can I make money? I just didn't know how. And like you said, like you told me, like, I had success so far, what did I do wrong, where did I screw up, and how come I can't even make like any calculation in my mind to find a way to make money? And in 2 weeks the bills were due, and I know I'm going to go so overdraft that my bank even won't allow me to pull in money to buy food for my kids. I'm like, that's really bad. That's really messed up. At that point, I just broke down and cried. I kind of like, I really cried for the first time in my adult life.
Yeah.
And then like after that, you know, it's nice, the violins in the background and everything, but all of a sudden I'm like, wait, Sagit, so that's great. You can cry, get it out, but what are you going to do about it?
Right.
And then that's the thought that really made me actually think about a solution. Like, okay, what am I going to do about it? And I decided to reach out to the entrepreneurs that I know from my connections, my podcast and everything that I know were in similar situations and can help me. So I reached out, first of all, to Jason Zook, who's an amazing entrepreneur. You guys know him?
No, I don't think so. We might need to get to know him.
yeah, totally. Jason Zook, he has a community called Wandering Aimfully, along with his wife. Caroline, and they are awesome, and they have the membership site and stuff. He's like, he had a company called I Wear Your Shirt, where he wore t-shirts.
Okay, I know that guy. Yeah, that must be him. Okay, gotcha.
Totally. So he's got a lot. He had a lot of PR back then, and you know, he built a $1 million company. Then we went into debt, and then he decided, okay, what am I going to do about it? He started building his way out with his wife. And so I reached out to him. He got on two 1 hour calls with me. Like, he didn't have to do
right.
it, but he did it with all his heart and just like tried to help me. And one thing he said, which was very impactful for me, was like, Sagi, you're doing this thing for everyone else and you're thinking about your entire like surrounding and everybody else around you, but what about you?
Mm.
So now it's Sagi time, and you have to do you. And that same week, I told my partner that I'm leaving. I need to open a fresh new clean slate, new page in life, and my end business, and that I'm leaving.
Wow.
So, and the same week, I also got in touch with Calvin Beck, and I didn't expect to hire him as a coach. I just, Calvin, like, listen, man, you've been in debt, and can you maybe help me? I'm in a bad situation here. And Calvin was not really like Jason. He wasn't like, he was just, dude, I can help you, so I can coach you if you want. But by the way, my price has doubled. So, yeah, it was because
wow.
He promised me his prices would double if I reach out back to him again ever in the future.
Oh, wow.
And it happened. So it was like, it was very tough. It was not, he was not nice to me back then. It was like really kind of like, dude,
the real
if you want help,
love.
I can help you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, but I need to coach you. You know, I took a couple of days. Obviously, it was hard for me to make that call. I didn't have any money. I was in debt. And now the price has doubled. That was crazy. but eventually, this time I chose to follow my gut and to follow my intuition. And I just brought him on. I said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to hire him, man. And I flew him here to Israel to start. And we had a VIP day.
Mm-hmm.
And Calvin helped me build a vision and really start crushing it. Really, like ever since, like the first month, I just started getting new clients on and made like more than I ever thought I could make, like especially in 1 month time. Ever since then, it's like game changing. It was a game changer.
It sounds like a lot of the things that you learned through that coaching experience still echo through your work today. So what do you feel that you received that you now are still using, either you're teaching your clients or you're still using day to day?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things that I got was the vision part.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I also learned, like, when I, in the past year with my new podcast, the Mindful and Ruthless podcast, I interviewed so many amazing entrepreneurs that have done so many, you know, like, you know, self-made millionaires. And it all comes down to three pillars that every one of them has in place in terms of like their entrepreneurial success. And so the first thing is clarity of vision. Each and every one of them has a vision. They know where mm-hmm. they want to be. Most of them actually have it written out mm-hmm. in a way. And even some of them write it out every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So clarity of vision is the first pillar everybody has in place. Based on that, they actually take action with reinforcing manifestation and the law of attraction, you can call it, like to their actions,
mm-hmm.
which meaning they don't just take action based on the vision. They actually, they don't take action. They manifest things into their life by using visualizations and meditation and just like pure willpower. And they're like, they're calling out the universe, like, universe, hey, you see my vision, you're going to give it to me. Like, they're really, you know, their mindset is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they right. keep working and improving their mindset all along.
Mm-hmm.
And they study neurohacking and they study their own mindset all the time. So that's the second pillar in place. That's law of taking action with the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And the third pillar they all have in place is mentorship and accountability. So they all have some kind of coach, some kind of mastermind they're a part of. They all have that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, like, there's almost none of them that doesn't have a coach or a mentor or like some kind of mastermind. And Pat Flynn, when I interviewed him, I asked him, like nobody talks about masterminds enough. Like, can you explain to me like how you see your mastermind and how important they are to you? And he's like, dude, like my mastermind, and he made a gesture with his hand, kind of let's say like a chin level. And he said, like, this is like, let's say if my family's up here and then the mastermind, and then he may like just went down with his hand just a bit, is right here, just below his family. Like, and the rest of my friends and everybody else, and then
off,
like, down here. Like, my mastermind is way up. So you see how important accountability and mentorship are for
yeah.
entrepreneurs that are already successful. But it makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you look at Olympic champions, if you look at amazing athletes that achieve so much, they all have a coach. They all have some kind of accountability.
Yeah. Yeah. When I hired my first coach, that was a game changer. It just, you know, like I'd been doing fine. I'd been an entrepreneur for 5 years. No, longer than that, 7 years on my own. And I'd been doing fine. Everything was fine. You know, it was just fine. I hired a coach and everything became exceptional. And then I found the person I coach with now, who's an even better fit, and just things go through the roof. It changes everything.
Amazing.
It's incredible.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's a game changer.
Yeah. It's huge. It's absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Are you still working with a coach today then?
Things changed a bit, but in 2018 I had two one-on-one coaches and two masterminds that I was a part
nice.
Of. So right now I spent in 2018 alone I spent over 70K on coaching and personal development.
Wow. Yeah. I actually find that with a couple of my clients, they have, you know, two or three coaches. I'm just one of the voices that they listen to, which is really interesting. I appreciate hearing that, that you tend to do that as well.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, it's like, I don't know if it's the best thing to do, you know, but, I got so fired up about seeing the results working with Kelvin that I said, okay, now like, so the second thing that came my way was when I got another letter from one of the Israeli authorities. That was a few months after we started working together with Kelvin. I got a letter saying, I owe another 22K to one of the Israeli authorities. And I'm like, what? Like another 20? I'm just making my way out of this. and that's when I said, okay, I need to get on top of my business as a businessman. But I'm not really good at that. And my finances are not in place. So I hired a financial coach. And
nice.
He's with me till this day. So I work with him. I talk with him once a week. He helps me get on track of my finances. And that also goes for like where your weaknesses are, get a coach.
Right.
And they can totally help
you. Absolutely.
So that was a finance coach. And I also joined a mastermind with a great person called Mark Bowness. So he's like this community specialist. He helps build tribes.
Mm.
And
yeah.
And I wanted to build a new community, and he really helped me. He's the one that helped me launch Mindful and Ruthless. And I was on his mastermind, and now we're actually starting to work one-on-one. And I also got accepted to Pat Flynn's mastermind. So
nice.
I joined that without even thinking. So
yeah.
I'm still on Pat's mastermind, and that's awesome. And getting coached by Pat and with the amazing, amazing people that are there. I'm definitely feeling like I'm like the smaller player, you know, sitting with all those people in a mastermind together was just amazing. So we should be having another mastermind in March, meeting in San Diego, just off the social media marketing world. And I can't wait for that. It's just like amazing people. Everybody has their own business going on.
Mm.
I'm learning a lot from everybody there.
Awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So let's kind of get into your own expertise a little bit. You call yourself a full stack designer, and me coming from the engineering world, I know that in the software industry, they actually talk about full stack as being someone that, you know, a full stack coder or full stack developer. You know, there's someone that builds a product from inception to the final version because they know all these different kinds of codes. And, you know, when I was going through school, we could learn a lot of codes if we wanted to. And it was never my thing. But, you know, you use that term to describe yourself as a designer. What does it mean in a designing sense? And was this something that you picked up in school, or have you learned, you know, the different trails along the way, or the different models that you use along the way?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I'm not even really looking at myself as a full stack designer right now. Back then in the startup world, that was my term because it's how, like you said, there's full stack developers, and that's where it came from. Like people like developers that can do the front end, they can do the back end,
mm-hmm.
they can do like algorithms, they can do like different kind of things in order to get any product up. And I was that designer that also could do full stack design. I could do everything, executing a whole startup from scratch to millions of users.
Mm-hmm.
So from like MVP or like the first initial product and even prototype of the product, including research, including visualizations of the prototype, including making the prototype, including knowing enough front end to get a website up for the company, including later on doing marketing materials, including doing the product itself, the first version. Then in later versions, iterating on very robust and complex designs. You know, different scenarios where you have a dashboard, but you know, some scenarios of people, like some users are not logged in, some are logged in but don't have the actual, you know, like plan, like they're unsubscribed to another plan that doesn't give them that part of the dashboard, like those kind of like interactions, and then creating even micro interactions to say how, and now like animations are a big thing today, and how transitions happen in screens. We're just used to it. It's like our standard, but it's a whole lot of work to plan interactions. So I can also plan interactions and work and do those animations in software that I use in order to communicate those to developers. So that was the whole like, and then working with the developers to make sure everything's working, doing user testing later on to make sure the data is getting back and to analyze that data and to tweak it. So that whole thing is the skills that I've learned coming from the startup industry. And the thing that I'm bringing it to now is actually life. So I'm actually, the way I see it is right now I'm trying to build my full stack life. And so I also want to be a full stack father.
Yeah.
I want to be a full stack husband. I want to be a full stack entrepreneur. I want to be good at business and in visionary. Like, you know, I want to be good in hands-on and in like, you know, planning the high level stuff. I want to be a full stack coach. I don't want to be just like, you know, so I want to be everything that I'm doing today. And I'm seeing it like my whole life coming together in such a way, which is full stack. Just building it all together.
I love that so much. I really do love that concept. Partly just because, you know, I'm a coach. So then, yeah, like I definitely talk about coaching the whole entrepreneur whenever I discuss the work that I do. But also something that I don't think you probably know, though our listeners have heard this before. I used to own a website development company, which I sold last year. So stack development is absolutely, you know, this is something that I'm familiar with just from being years in the industry. And so I kind of, you know, if you'll allow me just for a second, I would love to talk shop with you a little bit, because I've heard that you have some pretty strong opinions about, web design and how the flow of a website can work. And I think it's really great to help convey some of that stuff to our listeners because, you know, we have entrepreneurs from, you know, they're just starting out all the way to they've been in the business for a decade, you know? So, and sometimes if they're still just starting out, they're hacking their website themselves. So one of the things that I really love to teach is to design your website to stay in control of the user. So really only giving them one or two options on the website, each web page, and that leads to another part of the web page. You're truly actually leading them through the different stages, getting deeper into the website. And I was looking at your website and poking around. It seems like you kind of have the same belief, but from what I can tell, you're taking it even one step further. And I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that.
I think that when it comes to funnels, first of all, I'm not saying I'm a pro. Definitely, I'm not Russell Brunson or anything.
No,
I'm not. I'm definitely not. Not a pro at that, and my website is, I can't say that my website right now is a great example of how funnels should be built, because right now on my website, to tell you the truth, I have no funnels. My website represents my new community, and my new community right now has no products other than my mastermind, which was pitched to individuals getting on phone calls with me through my Facebook group. So all my funnels based on my Facebook group right now, if you can think about that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you don't have to have, in my opinion, you know, I teach my clients, like, you don't have to have a funnel built on ClickFunnels in order to have a funnel. You're going to have a sales funnel no matter what. Your bottom of your sales funnel is your Facebook group, and that's totally legit.
Right. Yeah, and I'm saying, like, in terms of the website, I have, you know, multiple stuff going on. I have like design services for that I thought of doing once. So I have that in top menu and stuff. But I think I think when we're wanting to design any website or any like any funnel, we need to, of course, focus the person that we want to focus into doing what we want them to do. Like, obviously, so removing menus from landing pages, that's, of course, like an obvious thing to do. Mm-hmm. But the things that I usually talk about when I do design audits with some entrepreneurs is, I talk to them about the small stuff that can make a huge difference. So I talk to some entrepreneurs revising their landing pages, making very small tweaks and increasing the conversions by 30%. Mm-hmm. Mm. And those are the kind of things that are the visual things that create emotion and spark emotion in users and visitors. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, we buy out of emotion.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
So there are things that you can do in any website to increase the emotion level. And I think that emotion level is what creates perceived value of your product and can connect the person so they would want to stay for longer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for instance, I'll give you a few of those. So
Okay. First
of all is there is something called composition. Composition is the way things are laid out mm-hmm. together, like in harmony. And there is one amazing tip for optimizing a composition of anything, like even a picture on Instagram or going all the way to a landing page. It's mm-hmm. having one object which is very, very, very big, and then one object which is very, very, very small, and the rest are the middle sized objects. So for instance, if because that what happens there is, it's like, for instance, you have so I had a review of Cassidy Tull. She's a founder of something called Succulents and Sunshine, which is a blog about succulents. As funny as it is, it's a whole world apparently, and she has a course to grow succulents at home. And I went over her landing page and was converting pretty well, but she wanted more. She wanted to optimize it, so we went over her landing page, and I saw that the picture on top of the succulent was pretty much on the same size as if you take the whole typography block of like, hey, the course that will help you grow succulents, you know, in the best possible way, get it now, right? So that was like mm-hmm. the part where she had the text and the CTA button was the same size as the picture of the succulent on the right side of it. So I'm like, listen, take that succulent, which is nice, but increase the hell out of it. Just take it and blow it up. Huge. Have it even cropped in the background. And when it's like that, it will create contrast between the picture and the image to the text. And that's what created a beautiful, beautiful top part. And now she changed all her website to have big cropped succulents. And the text is like laid out beside them. And it looks amazing. It looks really, really better. So those kind of small tweaks really help. And the small object that I was talking about, it can be just like even a Facebook icon that leads to your Facebook group or page. So it can be totally just like some kind of, find us on Facebook, or, you know, those small icons can be very small, and therefore they create the contrast between the huge element and those small icons.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle, you have all the text and CTAs and stuff like that you usually have. And that creates amazing contrast, and contrast creates emotion.
Nice. Yeah.
Cool.
I dig it.
Now, another tip is every part of any landing page should be, or any website should be, something you want to take, print, and hang in your living room.
Right.
Like, people don't think about it that way, and then create really ugly, amazing, like really. So much like all those funnels that you see on ClickFunnels, most of them are really, really ugly, because what? They want video and they want a title.
Right.
And they say it converts well.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, like, this doesn't convert. You know, like, people, like, you know, a good funnel that converts well will convert way, way better if it just designed well.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean you have to give up the video or the title. You can just make them look like in one piece, in harmony, in a way that this looks like a frame that you want to just take, print, and hang in your living room.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about those kind of things that way, every part of your landing page, when scroll down to it, it kind of like looks like a unified piece, where all objects work together in that composition tip I just gave, mm-hmm. then you're on the path to maximizing the conversions of anything you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It used to drive me nuts where I would find websites, you know, like, gosh, yeah, use online marketing tips and make sure that you're controlling your traffic and that you have proper calls to action and there are colors that will convert, da da da. But then, like, the rest of the website is so ugly. So, like, you don't even want to stay there. So, like, why would I even look at your button?
right. Totally. And so it's all a game of contrast.
What are some of your favorite plugins that you tend to use all the time?
Sure. So I think the one that I was really, the one that I could really recommend to anyone is Elementor. I know a lot of people use all kind of like builders, like Divi and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like I use mm-hmm. Elementor. I'm a diehard fan of Elementor. It's just great. It works really good. It just, you can have full freedom to do whatever you want with it. And that's how I build all my landing pages, all my funnels. When I do funnels, it's how I build my website. It's easy to also explain to others how to deal with it. So my team knows how to work with it. All my blog posts are like that. All my podcast pages, if you go to the podcast page, to my podcast page, look on my website and then go into each and individual podcast, you can go and see it's all Elementor. Mm-hmm. It's just so smart. It just has widgets and symbols and like stuff that you can use very easily. Like you can take a whole section of your website with, let's say, a testimonial and include, like, say, this is a symbol and I can use it in any other page on my website. And if you have one website, you can really easily export from one website to the other, like Elementor symbols. And so I use it across websites, and I actually use the same kind of designs on my Israeli website, which is all in Hebrew, and my SagiSchreiber.com website, which is all in English, just because I can really easily export and import and then like just change the stuff in there. So that's one. Elementor is a great one.
Or as far as themes go, I know that Veronica and I use Enfold, which... Yeah. Kind of has a module. I don't know. How would you explain
it? I mean, it's drag and drop, but so it used to be really heavy because it comes with all of everything you could ever possibly want to do to a website. Now I think they cleaned up the code a little bit, which is really good. So it loads a lot faster. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm over here looking at Elementor though, and what you're just talking about online. And I mean, it looks like I can do a lot of the stuff that we know about in Enfold, but, yeah, it'll definitely be something that I'll pay attention to for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they got a new pop-up feature to it, and I tried it, and it's amazing. Like everything is integrated with ActiveCampaign and everything like that. Mm. And for my online courses, I use WooCommerce, obviously WooCommerce, Woo memberships and stuff like that, and then combined with WP Courseware, where basically everything with Elementor works just perfectly well. I have full control of my course pages and the dashboards and everything. So it's very easy to work with it all together. It was like, of course, it takes time to put it together the first time. Mm-hmm. Once you did that, though, it's just definitely like a smooth flow. I can launch new courses, launch new products, and launch new upgrades and upsells. And so definitely something that I'm working with. In terms of other plugins that I would say on WordPress, I actually like, you know, all these regular plugins like Yoast SEO and custom HTML and CSS plugins. There's one plugin though that I just downloaded and I'm going to try, which converts funnels one second, I'll find it. It's basically, it makes you do stuff that ClickFunnels can do, which is really cool.
Really?
So like upsells, right? Yeah. Like and order bumps and stuff like that, which is amazing. And so I want to try working with that in my stuff in order to upsell my courses and do order bumps just straight at the checkout page. And it has a feature that beautifies WooCommerce's checkout pages and stuff like that. Mm. And you can put testimonials on the side, and it's really, really cool.
What was the name of that one?
So there's like a company called WooFunnels. Like they build basically So yeah, the website's like buildwoofunnels.com. That's like the website. Okay. And they have multiple plugins. So for instance, like one of them is custom WooCommerce checkout pages. The other one is order bumps for WooCommerce. And the other one is like upstroke or something like that, which is like the upsells. Mm. And it's pretty awesome. So it's like WooFunnels. You can, anybody can just search WooFunnels on Google.
Yeah.
Just find it there.
Okay.
And it's really, really cool. So I definitely use that. If you don't have Elementor and the pop-up plugins, I would recommend Convert Pro, which is pretty awesome for pop-ups. Okay. I used that until I had, you can build like custom pop-ups inside WordPress, fully customizable, and then like have them show up whenever you want.
Nice.
Cool. All right. Well, one of the things that we've been talking about as well in this conversation is that you started traveling, you know, you got your early experience after working at Fiverr, traveling to the West Coast here in the States. Sounds like you're pretty well vetted in the traveling world, especially when it comes to, you know, going to conferences and meeting, you know, individuals who have been up on stage. Do you have any conferences coming up that you're going to be speaking at, or anything you're looking forward to in 2019 that you're just excited to go to besides the social media world conference?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I actually don't have any speaking gigs planned yet. Definitely planning to do that. I, coming from Israel, you know, every flight to the US is kind of like is a whole like,
yeah, it's an adventure. Yeah.
Yeah. And with two kids at home, small kids and stuff like that, I just try to make things, not as hard on my wife and the kids. And definitely when I have the podcast interviews and everything like that. So I'm looking for definitely way more podcasts in 2019, maybe a couple speaking opportunities, which I definitely don't have, planned as of now. Mm-hmm. But maybe FinCon, thinking about that. And, I am going to FlynnCon 1. Have you heard about that?
Heard about that. Yeah.
So I was in charge of the branding of the conference.
Oh, cool.
So
that's nice.
You guys, it's not live yet. The branding's not live yet. So, it was just done, I guess like a couple weeks ago, we finished it and Pat already shared it on his Instagram once, but, I still haven't shared it. It's like fresh. I'm probably going to share it this week sometime. And it's going to be live on the website and everything. It's going to be the whole, you know, the whole branding of the conference. That's going to be awesome. We worked with this amazing 3D artist called Yumbo and created amazing visualizations. We called what we call, FlynnCon Valley. And it's just like a beautiful kind of like land of entrepreneurship and Pat Flynn, you know? So he has the DeLorean, he has all kind of objects there. And, like really, really awesome. So waiting for you guys to see it.
Nice.
Cool. All right. Well, wow. Already put pretty far into the conversation. I think we'll have to wrap it up before too long. But before we do, want to get into the rapid fire question segment. And the first question that I want to ask, you know, we've talked about the influential podcasts that you've listened to, but what are three of your top favorite books that you gift or tell others about?
Oh, definitely. Great question. So one of them is Expert Secrets, I think, from Russell Brunson. It's a game changer. Definitely working with something like the perfect webinar script, which you can also find, videos of it on YouTube. And if you do read the book and you do learn about the perfect webinar script, go and watch Russell Brunson's talk from 10X Growth Con in 2018. I was actually there and I was one of the people that actually bought into it. And then I went back and watched the recording. I was there live and I actually bought from it. But like you made $3 million on stage in 90 minutes.
Oh my God.
And with this script. And I just went back and watched it after I learned the perfect webinar script. And then I was like, oh my God, he actually practices what he preaches. Like that's the perfect webinar script that he like carries out on stage and nails 3 million in 90 minutes with the script that he teaches. Like that's gold. So Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson, the first book. Second book that I would recommend is called Pitch Anything. And this is an amazing book by an author called Oren Clough, if you guys have heard.
I think I've heard of the book, though, yeah.
Yeah, it's a must. It's a total must. He's talking about how to pitch anything, but again, from the emotion standpoint. Like, when you talk to a person, how do you reach his emotions? And how do you go for something called the croc brain, which is, you know, the deeper part of the brain, the one that triggers fight or flight. And
right.
He has an amazing analogy there that he says, like, our mind is designed to work, our brains are designed to work by movement, because back then when we used to see movement, we knew if it's something coming to get us or do we want to get it, right? So, and if we want to get it, do we want to kill it or do we want to mate with it? And it was so primitive, that part of the brain. And it goes the same for ideas. So when you hear an idea or someone pitches something to you, do you want to kill it or do you want to mate with it? And that's like really a game changer. And he teaches how to frame things and use like frame stacking and basically hit the croc brain. It's really cool. He gives a lot of examples of how he's done business. And so it's a great book. Really, really love it. So that was Pitch Anything. The third one is, I would go for The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. And although, again, Grant Cardone, I know a lot of people are like, I don't want to hear about Grant Cardone, this guy. And he's so not politically correct. And in his book, he actually, like, I heard the audiobook, and he's like, he actually says man and dude and stuff like that, where the book also goes for women, which is totally not cool. But once you peel through those layers of and get to the message of what he's talking about, it's an amazing, life-changing book where he talks about how you need to understand success. Like, how do you see success for yourself? And he's talking about like everything we haven't thought of when it comes to success. And he gives amazing examples of people that achieved success and what they did in order to do that. And he talks about a principle called massive action and how, you know, nature works in such massive like action. And we were always trying to not get burnt out, right? And like our whole entire environment and our parents and our society tells us, don't work too hard, don't burn out, right? Mm-hmm. And we definitely try to do that, but that's exactly the other way around. If we look at nature, if we look at kids, they always run, they always cry, they always laugh. They're in full capacity. They're in massive action. If we look at ants, if we look at plants, everything's in massive action. The earth moves all the time in massive action. But we as humans, we try to not do that. So we actually have to turn it around and be in massive action, and then we won't get burned out. So right. It's kind of like, anyways.
But great book with so many. I think it has that. Going along that line, I think it has something to do with actually picking something, though, that resonates with who you are, to be able to stay in that. Because, you know, Gary Vee talks about that all the time. It's like, you have to find something that, you have to have that passion in what you're doing. Now, there's other P's, right, which I have in my freebie, that, you know, help you along the way, being your purpose, how you interact with others, and then what the market actually wants. But you have to have that internal fuel to keep going. Otherwise, you're essentially working a job, and you are going to burn yourself out, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. You have to be in line with what you love doing and what you're here to do in this world. So definitely agree with that. So those are the three books that I would recommend. I have a full list of them on my website, by the way. I have a blog post that just like with all my recommendations of books from for entrepreneurs.
Nice.
Cool.
So besides books, what gifts do you like to give most often?
I think that I barely do gifts more than quality time with people.
That's a gift.
Which is, I think, yeah, I mean, I just heard a talk by, name was, I forget the name. Amazing guy. And he said, like, at the end of your life, you think about people don't think about what money they left on the table, but what love they left on the table. And it's and then I'm like, I just try to spend so much quality time with the people that I love and be there. And it really sucks as an answer for what gift to give, but I think I just try to give quality time.
I definitely, yeah, relate with that one for sure. So yeah, no, that's perfectly valid answer.
I have one though. If you're like, if I'm thinking about it, like, and by the way, gifts for me, like, are also Amazon books. Like, I just buy Amazon gift cards and audible books. But one book that I gave out to a few of my friends, which I think is amazing, is What the Buddha Taught, which is a book about Buddhist essentials, like basically like the Buddhist beliefs. I'm not a Buddhist. I'm a Jewish guy, but I'm also not religious in any way. And I think like I even connect to that, to those Buddhist beliefs more. And I think it's one of the beautiful things that one of the most amazing books that are out there to really explain how life can work. And so it just connects with everything that we do as well as entrepreneurs. So yeah, I just
cool. One great book. Cool. What is one message that's out there that you think is a disservice to youth?
I think that most of the messages out there are a disservice to youth. I think most of what we learn in society, in schools, for my parents, are a disservice to us. And I think that the message that we need to provide to our kids are just follow your own intuition, follow your own path. And it's just not a message. Like, and we're just taught to not reach for success. We're taught to just acquire mediocrity in everything we do.
Yeah.
We're taught to just be mediocre, like, and it's okay. It taught to be standard, lay low, not, you know, and it's so wrong. We're taught not to talk to strangers when we're kids. Why are we becoming, you know, introverts from age zero?
Right.
Yeah.
It's so wrong. So I think that most of the messages out there are just like terrible. Unfortunately, we're not being taught the correct way. I think one of the most important thing that I can say is take whatever you love. And I will teach that to my kids and just like go with it all the way. Make it your best hobby and then later make it a career and then teach it to others. And the second message I would give is the value that they give out is the value that they'll give back in anything in life. So,
yeah, I love that. Yeah. So I'm a big traveler, as well. Love it. I'm all over the world all the time.
Yeah. And you're Delhi soon.
Yes. I'm excited about that. But yeah, so what, you know, you've traveled a lot too. What would you suggest? What's your travel tip, your one travel tip for our listeners?
Oh, man. Myanmar, Burma.
Oh, yeah?
Myanmar, Burma. Game changer. I think that it's one of the places. I've traveled to Southeast Asia, and I've been to India. Mm-hmm. I've been to China. In China, I've done even Kung Fu in the mountains with monks and stuff. That's a whole different story. But you know, like, I've been to amazing places, like in nowhere, in the middle of nowhere. But in Laos, I traveled by foot almost all of Laos. And like, but at the end of the day, Myanmar, Burma is a place where not only the views are amazing, but the spirituality and the people are an example of what humans need to be like, I think.
Wow.
It's just amazing individuals that are so pure, and they are treated from day one not to have ego. That's how they grow up. They're like, don't have ego. Experience everything for your own self. You are like in full responsibility of your life. No one else is. No external resources. Like nothing happens to you because of something external. It's all you. Except like, you know, where you are, like it's just beautiful messages and messages of like helping others. It's just beautiful. I can give one example. Like we stopped at a gas station. My driver back then was, he was a poor man. Like he's not like, you know, everybody there is not so wealthy. You're really corrupt and rich. We stopped at a gas station. There was a few stray dogs. Those dogs, you know, they walk around there. So there's a lot of stray dogs, and they were just walking around the gas station. And my driver, I just like noticed that he stopped fueling the car, and he just went to the shop nearby, bought him some chips, and started giving them food. Like, he didn't have to do that, and those dogs were definitely in the other side of the gas station, but he just like identified that from like, and he did something about it. So I think it's a beautiful example of like how life should be treated. And so therefore the people there are the most amazing thing ever in the world. And I never met those kind of individuals in my life.
Wow. That's really incredible. And I kind of gasped when you said that, because my friend was living in Burma, Myanmar, for the past year, and I could have gone to visit her. Oh, wow. And had someone in the country. Wow. And I didn't go.
Well, you always have time to go. And if you go, by the way, let me know, and I'll connect you with my driver. Anybody who uses this podcast as well. Like, this is an amazing individual. And I came back to Burma, Myanmar again with my wife for the honeymoon. And I had to show her this place. And we took him on again. And we were in touch on Facebook. It's like an amazing person. So definitely amazing. Like, wow. To get a private tour of Burma for like 2 weeks, it's amazing.
Wow.
And it's cheap.
Yeah.
How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
I think it's just a matter of taking action and giving. Just giving. I think that it's a matter of motivating others and giving them what they need in order to succeed, and taking action, leading anything that you think might help other people. So I would think that, again, it's all about value. It's like about the serving mentality. And it's like, once you make any other person's dream come true, it's like, you know, they will make your own dream come true as well. Like, life will make it happen for you. So it's in any community like that. The value that you give out is the value that you get back.
Amen.
Cool. Love that. Well, Sagi, thank you so much again, man. And again, you can be found at SagiSchreiber.com. Where can people find you on the social medias?
Sure. So if you are listening to podcasts, just you can search for the Mindful and Ruthless podcast on iTunes or any podcast app. And also the Mindful and Ruthless Facebook community. We have an amazing group, very active. And if you join, you also get a three-part video series on that I created on how to build your vision, which is basically the same drills that my coach did with me. As soon as I got out of my bed situation, I created this. The first thing I did, I created this guide, so others can build their own vision and for free. So definitely, it's not even a funnel. It's like definitely just like helping other people build their vision.
Awesome.
Nice. I already signed up. See you there.
Awesome. It's awesome.
All right. Thank you again, man.
Happy to have you.
Cheers.
All right,
thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
There you guys have it. Lots of little gems in this interview. And personally, I wasn't expecting the conversation to go the route it did with the website tools, but hey, you know, that's pretty valuable info, especially if you haven't started your first website yet. If you want to learn more about how Sagi got himself out of his debt situation, I'll be sure to have his interview with Pat Flynn in the show notes. And as far as the show note extras, wow, he has some really great quality stuff in his channel, considering that he's only recently started it. Not only does he share his experience at last year's 10X conference, but he also has some great pointers and interviews too. And let me tell you, you know, the work that he puts into his interviews on YouTube is way above average. He doesn't just put a random graphic up for the entire conversation. It's not just two talking heads. He actually cuts an intro to the interview for the video. And on top of that, he does some pretty crafty audio work as well. It's a really great quality you guys should check out. And of course, subscribe to his channel as well. Really the four videos that I wanted to highlight include two short ones followed by two interviews. The first video is one of Russell Brunson making the $3 million on stage at the 10X Growth Con. We talked about this briefly in today's chat, but I figured you guys would actually want to see this. Next up, I have another video where Sagi gives his perspective on how to network with influential entrepreneurs. And then the two interviews I have include one he had with Pat Flynn and then another one with Paul Jarvis, who is someone that, you know, he has been really following for quite a bit. So be sure to check those all out via the show notes at newinceptions.com/146. That's it, guys. Thanks for joining me again for this session. Remember, you can get one of Sagi's most recommended books, Expert Secrets, for free at newinceptions.com/expertsecrets. And then there, amongst all the other tricks and topics, is the perfect webinar that he was talking about in today's conversation. Again, The URL for that book is newinceptions.com/expertsecrets. So that all said, thank you again for spending a little bit of time with us today. I always appreciate having you here. And until next session, guys, dig in, have fun, and take care on whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.